The views, information, or opinions expressed during this podcast are solely those of the individuals involved and do not represent those of Intuit QuickBooks or any of its cornerstone brands or employees. This podcast does not constitute financial, legal, or other professional advice or services. No assurance is given that the info is comprehensive, accurate, or free of errors. And the information presented is for general information purposes only. Intuit QuickBooks does not have any responsibility for updating or revising any information presented. Listeners should verify statements before relying on them. QuickBooks Money is a standalone Intuit offering. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC.
Hey everyone, I'm Austin Hankwitz.
And I'm Janice Torres. Welcome to Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories, a podcast brought to you by Intuit QuickBooks and iHeartRadio's Ruby Studio. In each episode, Austin and I chat with small business owners as they share their stories about the ups and downs of owning a small business. Plus, we'll learn from their experience about how you can help fortify and strengthen your own business. Austin, we talk a lot about the excitement and rewards of starting our own business, but it's not all smiles and unicorns, is it?
It is not all rainbows and unicorns. Definitely not, right? On one hand, going into business for yourself is very rewarding, but on the other hand, it can also be very difficult.
You know, I will never forget about 5 years ago when I got my first surprise four-figure tax bill after having my taxes done professionally for the first time. I want to say I made like $26,000 with my side hustle. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know anything about estimated taxes until I got my tax return and a payment voucher that said I owed like $8,000.
Oh.
And I was like, excuse me, what is happening? And I think that's the first moment that, A, I realized I had a whole business that I needed to figure out how to manage. But also, I was way out of my league and I needed support. And so I tell folks now as a business coach, please get yourself some financial expert that is going to help you navigate these treacherous entrepreneurial waters because they are very unfamiliar to many of us.
Not just unfamiliar, but unforgiving. Oh my goodness. Find a professional, put them in your corner. And to that point, Janice, right, I got my undergraduate degree in finance and economics. So I kind of had an idea of how to just navigate taxes a little bit as a solopreneur in the beginning. But the mistake I made was forgetting that the state of Tennessee, in my experience, had like an extra business tax that I had no idea existed. Mm. So when I got a lovely love letter from the state of Tennessee for a $13,000 tax bill in 2020, that I wasn't expecting, I was equally as surprised and taken back.
Yikes. Well, our guest actually has an incredibly inspiring story relating to this topic. So let's go ahead and introduce her.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder?
They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do, that's how you business differently.
This episode is brought to you by Intuit QuickBooks. Learn more at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds in envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Taylor Randall grew up on a farm in Washington State where she learned to appreciate making things by hand and being self-reliant. Her earliest memories are of sitting on her grandmother's floor, measuring yarns and hand-tying quilts. Eventually, her grandmother gifted her the prized vintage Montgomery Ward sewing machine, and Taylor would go on to create quilts as a side job from then on. When a financial emergency forced her to get creative, she did just that, starting craft vintage garments to sell on Depop. After more orders started coming in, she moved her business to Instagram and found herself featured in the New York Times a month later. Taylor is no stranger to the challenges of starting her own business and faced near ruinous adversity while trying to navigate the unique and complicated taxes that come with self-employment. She is very vocal about overcoming her own hurdles and helping others overcome theirs. Today, she runs her own business called Softpaw Vintage, where she creates clothing and accessories from vintage textiles. Taylor, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm tickled pink.
This is going to be such a fun conversation. Now, before we jump into the navigating taxes part of the conversation, I want to learn a little bit more about your business, Taylor, starting with the name. Is there a story behind the name Softpaw Vintage?
I mean, kind of. So I have two dogs and I had two cats at the time, and they would walk all over the fabric. And it kind of came through that. I wanted something short and sweet that people could like digest easily, and Soft Paw kind of just stuck.
It's such a cool name. Now, let's jump into the nitty-gritty a little bit. I'm curious, how much of your childhood was spent learning to sew and create? Did you get to appreciate it right away?
I think so, yeah. I mean, and I think it's a generational thing for sure. And I've always been drawn to like crocheting or knitting and hand sewing. And then my grandma would make the quilts, and then to like fashion them all together, you do yarn ties. So I remember quilts being laid out in the living room and like helping her like do the yarn ties and stuff. So I feel like it's just been part of my childhood and how I grew up.
Absolutely. Now, Janice talked about you selling your first coat on Depop. What went through your mind when you were like, wait a second, I am on Depop. It just sold. I'm making money. How cool was that for you?
Well, I think it was like out of necessity, because it was like the common COVID story of, I actually was bartending prior, and selling vintage was just like a side hustle. And when everything shut down, luckily I had a decent amount of like inventory. So I had like distressed vintage denim and like a stack of quilts that I just collected because I liked them. And I had made a coat for myself prior, and a lot of people, when I'd wear it out, like I got a lot of compliments on it. And so I kind of was just being resourceful, where I was like, I can't go and source more vintage to sustain myself, but I have these quilts. And so I made that first jacket. And when it sold, it definitely was really encouraging and rewarding. And then I started getting this influx of like messages for like custom orders. And I kind of just dove all in. I mean, I thought I would bartend the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. It was good money and I was really good at it. And it would be able to afford for me to like do my hobbies and like crafts on the side. And so when it just kind of jumped off like that, something did kind of click where I was like, oh, maybe this is what I'm meant to be doing. And there was that imposter syndrome of like, I knew how to sew, but not like garment construction. I wasn't familiar with the ins and outs of technical sewing. So as it kind of snowballed, I had to kind of catch up to the demand of what people were expecting. And I think it was the fire that I like needed under me.
I love it. And it's just such a common narrative that we hear from so many entrepreneurs. This happens by accident. It's one of those things that you don't even realize you're starting a business.
Yeah.
And so with that comes real life business problems, right? So yeah. The thing about a lot of business owners is they tend to share their victory stories on social media, right? But you're very open about the challenges that you face and how you've overcome them, which is great because I feel like you're helping other people avoid those same mistakes. So when you first started selling online, what was the first hurdle that you faced?
I would say, honestly, for me, it was kind of like comparison bingo, because I think there was this influx of other people in a similar vein to what I was doing. And I want to support the community and like be a part of it in that way of like sustainability and uplifting other artists and makers. But for me, it was really, I was getting in my own head. And I think when I kind of released that and just stayed in my own lane and wasn't looking to what others were doing, I think that really like shifted my creativity and it expanded my mind. And I think that definitely having a good, healthy boundary with like social media is important for me. I mean, that's how I make money, is through promoting and marketing through Instagram. And I'm very thankful for the following that I have, but it feels like a double-edged sword, because I feel like at times I'm considered like a content creator. Like, people like to see how I live just as much as they like to support my art, which is like a conflicting feeling. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it's kind of a weird feeling.
I think you can almost feel like you don't necessarily own any part of your existence when you're sharing all of it. So I think that's where that healthy boundary comes in, of just being okay with not necessarily having to show your entire existence on social media and utilizing what is most effective from a content perspective to get to your business goals without kind of losing what belongs to you.
Yeah. And that's kind of why I've navigated towards like doing a newsletter for paid subscribers to kind of like funnel them, like the people who want to hear it can, where I can talk about more vulnerable things versus like just feeling like I'm on blast on Instagram. And like some people just want to see the stuff that I'm making, yeah, you know, and some people want to see my dogs and like hear about my sobriety and like how I navigate my taxes and like small business stuff. So I think funneling people into that newsletter is like the best of both worlds, where I can kind of keep it separate.
Yeah. So you mentioned the word taxes. Let's talk a little bit about that. So we talk a lot about revenue, but you know, they say mo money, mo problems, right? So
yeah,
can you talk about how you've learned maybe the hard way to navigate the taxes that come with having a business?
Yeah. So, I mean, they don't teach you that stuff in school. You know, like I knew taxes were real. They say death and taxes, the two things that are unavoidable in life. And I think that I was just like turning my head the first couple 2 years.
Right.
Just would go plug in the numbers from the forms that I got and then just like, okay, I did the thing, you know, like the IRS is not forgiving. You can't be off a couple numbers. You can't just guess, you know.
Right.
So I think if I could go back in time, I would tell my younger self, like, just buck up and get the accountant, get stuff squared away, stay up on your quarterly. That is something that I kind of knew existed but did not want to participate in. I just didn't know what I was doing, and I am definitely still paying for it. I mean, it's hard to speak from the wound. Do you know what I mean? Like, I haven't really rounded the corner fully yet. I'm still sorting it out and kind of untangling the mess that I had created.
Yeah. Taxes are one of the most excruciating parts of owning a small business. And I've had my fair share of unexpected tax bills multiple times. So can you tell us about what your experience has been like and how you've navigated that tax bill?
Well, how I kind of found out about the immense tax debt that I'm in is, you know, my business was growing and I thought I was in a position to potentially buy a house. So in doing so, when you start talking to the broker and such, they're like, we need 3 years of back taxes. But through that, I kind of unearthed the fact that I had done 2020 wrong. And in doing so, I got, you know, my accountant and we amended that return. And I was living in my cute, perfect dream cabin on Mount Hood, you know, just chopping my firewood, taking my dogs on hikes and just sewing all day, living my literal dream. And then I found out that, like, oh, instead of the $800 that I had paid the IRS, I actually owed them closer to $10,000. And that was just through the IRS, because federal and state are different.
Right.
And so I owed the IRS about $8,000, and then I owed Oregon State about $3,000, I think. And then finding out I had done that year wrong, and, you know, I think it was 2022 at that time, and then 2021, those numbers were about the same. And so it's just kind of snowballed into the point where I owe about $30,000 to the IRS. So it was definitely overwhelming. I cried a lot and I threw my hands up and I was like, I can either keep going forward and hope that it works out, or I can just give up and go back to bartending. But I've really gotten accustomed to being my own boss and making my own hours, and I still enjoy sewing and I don't want to give that up. So I just took a deep breath and started looking for an accountant. And the thing about the IRS, even though they are like big, mean, and scary and inevitable, as long as you're in communication with them and actively making payments, they're not going to come and take your car. They're not going to come and take your TV or your dogs, or, you know what I mean? Like, I'm on a payment plan with them every month and it's for what I can afford. You know, I've looked at my budget and realistically, like, what can I get away with giving them without sacrificing a lot in my day-to-day life for myself personally and still maintaining the business?
So what was the one thing you did that you think was really effective in getting yourself set up for success moving forward?
I switched from an LLC to an S-Co, and I'm on a payroll company, so I pay myself out through the payroll company, and through that, I don't have to deal with figuring out taxes. So it's kind of programmed in there, just like if I was to go work at a restaurant and get a W-2, my taxes already get taken out. And so that kind of takes out the guessing game of like just chucking money at the IRS and like trying to anticipate based off of last year's sales what I should be setting aside. And when I learned that and my landlord was raising the rent at the cabin, I was like, this just isn't sustainable. I can't pay $2,000 in rent by myself and also be trying to get ahead of quarterly and, you know, material and everything else that goes into running a business and also paying off that tax debt. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I had this opportunity to go live and work on this farm in this work trade situation. The house I lived in was unfinished, but I wasn't paying rent. And so in that 9 month period, I was able to chuck $20,000 at the IRS.
Wow.
I was so privileged to have this opportunity. I wasn't paying electricity. I wasn't paying for anything. But it was like hard labor and I learned a lot. And then come January, I was like, okay, I'm ahead of like my quarterly for last year. Like I was in a good spot where I was like, I want to come home. I want to come back to Portland. I don't want to be, you know, living off grid, even though that's in line with the sustainability that I like. It was hard living on solar and it's hard not having a washer and dryer and showering with like pond water.
Oh my gosh, I could imagine.
That is an intense way to tackle your tax debt. My gosh.
Yeah. And I don't want to look at it as like, part of me thought I was like punishing myself, you know? And I kind of wish I would have not been so hard on myself about it. And like the farm was beautiful and I learned so much and it served its purpose. But at the end of the day, I'm just so happy to be back in Portland and like have the lights on past 6 p.m. and like have clean running water. And just like the whole journey has just shaped me to really appreciate every little thing. And so it was necessary.
I really appreciate your perspective, Taylor, because I think a lot of people who could encounter that, that might be the thing that discourages them from even continuing to run their business.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think it's important to know there are options for managing unexpected tax bills. So just know you're not alone in the struggle, but there are tools out there to help you.
Yeah, 100%. And it's allowing me to pivot in different ways where I'm now actively trying to create passive income. I started making patterns where people who are like, oh, I love that dress. I wish I could make that. They can go to my website and buy the pattern. I've also taught classes live on Zoom that is recorded that can just be sold. And then also with the newsletter, it's $5 a month and people who want to access that part of my life can.
Yeah. You're speaking my love language. Multiple income streams are the best.
Yes.
So, you know, the way that you share your challenges and your successes on social media, I think that's honestly one of the best things we can do as entrepreneurs because it helps everyone. And the thing that I love about QuickBooks and specifically their QuickBooks Money tool is that they're helping entrepreneurs navigate exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Keeping track of getting paid, keeping track of your taxes and all those things. So can you talk about what strategies you're now using to keep track of your finances and your regular product output when things need to be sent on top of, you know, managing custom requests? How do you keep all of that straight?
So in terms of QuickBooks, I actually use the QuickBooks app. So they have like an umbrella for self-employment. And I think it was my second year. I was like, okay, I got to get serious. I got to figure this out. So that was one of the first steps that I did on my own. And then I hired an accountant who helps me with my profits and loss and kind of keeps that stuff dialed for me, like the stuff that I can't wrap my head around. Like I outsource. That is the only thing I outsource in terms of like work, is I have an assistant who takes care of like the back end of stuff. In terms of like emails and custom orders and shipping, I had an assistant for a while, but I think a lot of people can relate to this in terms of like it being your own business and feeling like kind of a control freak, you know? Mm-hmm. Me being the face of my company, it feels weird to have someone else replying to my emails. And I feel like with custom stuff, it's such a visual thing. And so I'm extremely hands-on with 90% of my business.
Coming up after the break.
Those are really pivotal times when you kind of step up. And that's what I did. And then a month later, I was in the New York Times.
We'll be right back with Mind the Business.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do. The people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists.
But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones that make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers.
They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they all have in common, it's making their money work harder.
That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield.
Yes, 5% APY.
Making your money work as hard as you do. That's how you business differently.
This episode is brought to you by Intuit QuickBooks. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY.
Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn annual percentage yield. APY can change at any time.
Welcome back to Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeartMedia's Ruby Studio and Intuit QuickBooks.
Let's pretend we're talking to the solopreneur who's really excited about 2024 because they're going to finally start their solopreneurship journey starting this year. What piece of advice could you give that new business owner listening right now to help them avoid the challenges that you faced in your business back then?
I would say definitely get the QuickBooks app and the self-employment and just get familiar with your profits and loss. And another thing that I think has been really helpful for me is just like sticking with my gut. As my business started to gain momentum, I had a lot of opportunities to do things that didn't really resonate with me or my business. I think staying true to myself and my gut is what like got me to this point. And I think people appreciate that I'm not trying to sell them something that I don't support.
What incredible advice, Taylor.
Thanks.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Let's talk a little bit about your marketing strategy for your business. So you started on Depop and then eventually moved to Instagram to sell your products. Can you tell us what that transition was like? And did you have to rebuild an audience or did customers kind of just follow you from one site to another?
The reason why I chose to go to Instagram was Depop had so many fees and it felt like such a huge blow where I was like, I made this jacket for $200 and they're taking $25 and then the shipping and everything else. So I started the Instagram, just kind of throwing it at the wall and seeing what stuck. I mean, I was just trying to make money in any form of creativity. It wasn't specifically just quilts. And so through that, I think, I mean, again, that COVID story, people were just at home kind of on their phones and there was this huge like quilt movement. And I think it was just like the perfect storm for me, honestly. But I started utilizing my platform to also, I lived in this cabin on Mount Hood and, you know, I'd film me like chopping wood or like, you know, people were just interested in like this weird little chick who's just like living in the woods with her dogs and like making clothes out of quilts and like chopping her own firewood, you know? So I think it was me just being me and also like making cool shit. People were just there for it and it just grew.
Well, because it feels very authentic when you see someone living a lifestyle that then feeds into the products that they're selling, right? Like you live a sustainable lifestyle that is a very important aspect of just who you are. And so the fact that your products that you're selling reflects that, I think that's why people resonate with it so much, because it's real. It's not just something you're hopping on because it's trendy.
Yeah.
So let's talk more about that. Do you actually research what is selling and what is falling out of style? And how much do you lean on trends versus just taking inspiration from your own originality when you design something?
So I think in terms of sustainability, I think the word trends just needs to disappear. But this full circle movement of like, these quilts were made in like the early 1900s from clothes. And so me turning them back into clothes, I would like to think that it's a timeless movement versus like a trend. So I don't really look to anything else other than just like putting out stuff that I think is cool and looks good and hoping that other people agree. So to answer your question, I just think that like even the word trend just shouldn't be a thing in terms of like fashion, because that's like what's killing the planet, you know?
Yeah.
So you've actually said when sewing magazines interview you, they often ask the same question. When did you start your business? And you share an answer that just gives me goosebumps every single time I read it here, which is saying it wasn't when you sold your first garment or started your LLC, but instead when you started to take yourself seriously. Talk to me about that. When did you realize that? And what moment really inspired an answer like that?
So I was living with a partner at the time and a roommate, and it was during COVID, and my roommate, she ended up leaving, and then me and my partner broke up and he moved out. And so I kind of just surrendered and I was like, if I can just get creative and like pay rent and like put food on the table and like feed my dogs, then I will have been successful. And instead of just like being a victim to the situation and just throwing my hands up and like poor me, I just was like, I'm going to start taking myself seriously. And this is something that I want to do. And I think those are really pivotal times when you kind of step up. And that's what I did. And then a month later, I was in the New York Times.
Oh my gosh, I could not imagine that. And I totally agree, right? I think something that, you know, resonates here with me back in the day when I first started my business and the same time you did was I had to look myself in the mirror and say, wait a second, there's not a plan B. It's either plan A, we make it work, or plan A, we make it work, right? So shout out to you for making it work and making it into the New York Times. Now, I'm curious, you know, you do clothing, there's quilts, there's accessories. Do you have a favorite piece you enjoy creating the most?
I think just the jackets. I feel like they're timeless. And I think I've made so many of them that maybe I'm just the most comfortable like throwing one together. Like I could probably just cut it out without even using a pattern. I think that's my favorite. But also when I get a piece of material, sometimes I'll just know like, okay, this I'm making into a shirt, or like this is going to be a skirt. And that's when I feel the most fulfilled, is when I'm just like that inspired by something.
Well, let's figure out how we can get those quilt jackets in front of as many listeners as possible. Where can they go and check out your awesome work? Buy some of these amazing handmade vintage products.
Okay, so that's going to be on my website at softpawvintage.com. And then that is also my Instagram handle. And then for people curious about my life and sobriety and small business stuff, you could go to my Substack, which is called Off Leash, because I know I feel the most free when I can just say what I want. And my dogs feel the most free when they're off leash. And my dogs are like a part of my business. My dog Howdy is like on my sticker. I've made like sweatshirts before out of like vintage crew necks. So yeah, Off Leash is my Substack, and Soft Paw Vintage is my website.
Love the shout out to Howdy. I wish I had a dog named Howdy. That sounds like fun. Taylor, what's next for you? What is next for Taylor Randall?
So actually podcasting. I don't know. I've just felt really called to do it. I don't really see myself as a writer, but I think that I'm good at speaking and articulating myself in like more of a flow state instead of sitting down and like trying to get my ideas out. So on Substack, there's actually an area where you can add podcasts to it. And so I think that would be a good place for me to kind of dip my toe in and just do little recordings like that, like Q&As or whatever. But I'm going to keep sewing forever, I think. I think I'm just going to keep sewing until my hands fall off. So,
as you should, you are super talented, and I cannot wait to tune in to the podcast on your Substack.
Thank you so much for being here, Taylor.
Thank you.
Janice, could you imagine being on a farm for 9 months, just grinding away? Like, shout out to Taylor for paying off $20,000 during that period of time. That is so inspirational. But oh my goodness, I would fold in the first week. I couldn't do it. I don't know how she got away with this. This was incredible of her.
I think it just speaks to the resilience that is required when it comes to navigating this world of entrepreneurship. You just really don't know what's going to come. And her ability to make those hard choices, to know that she was going to be able to put herself in a better place financially, I think it's brilliant. And I give her so many props because I don't think I could do the same thing.
I'm right there with you. You know, something else that she mentioned that really resonated with me was being a victor and not a victim. Mm. I think a lot of entrepreneurs and just solopreneurs in general, small business owners, there comes a day where you have to make that decision of, okay, this is what I'm doing and I'm going to make it work. Like, there's no plan B. There's no alternative. It's plan A or plan A. And she made it work, right? She busted her butt. She got it done. And she is thriving now because of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think her conversation was a really good reminder that we don't have to go at it alone. You know, a lot of us are navigating our business finances in the beginning by ourselves, and we think we have to be the smartest person in the room. And when it comes to managing your business finances, as a money coach, I like to remind folks, it's a completely different process than managing your personal finances. You know, we're not talking about profit and loss and cash flow and tax strategies as much in the personal finance side of things. So just understanding that the language of money is completely different for an entrepreneur than it is for somebody who is used to getting a steady paycheck. It's a good reminder that if you don't know what's happening, it's actually really normal to feel that way, but you don't have to go at it alone.
Yeah, not only is it really normal, but it's actually encouraged to go seek help, right? Mm-hmm. I wish I would have sought accountant help or professional help in general regarding my business taxes and finances way back in the day, similar to Taylor's situation here, right? So if you are starting a small business in 2024, if you're an existing small business owner, solopreneur in general, don't be afraid to ask for help. It is absolutely encouraged. There are no dumb questions when it comes to taxes.
Absolutely. And you can start by checking out QuickBooks Money.
That is correct.
Well, that's it for today's episode. You can find me on social media at Yo Quiero Dinero Podcast.
And you can find me at Austin Hankwitz. You can follow Intuit QuickBooks on all social media at QuickBooks to get the tools you need to start, run, and grow your business. Head to QuickBooks.com today.
Don't forget to follow this show wherever you listen to podcasts so you can stay up to date on future episodes.
We also want to hear from you, so be sure to leave us a rating and a review.
See you next time.
This podcast is a production of iHeartRadio and Intuit QuickBooks. Our executive producer is Molly Socha. Our supervising producer is Nakia Swinton. And our writer is Eric Lija.
Our head of post-production is James Foster. QuickBooks Money is a standalone Intuit offering. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds in envelopes earn annual percentage yield. APY can change at any time. Money movement services provided by Intuit Payments, Inc., licensed as a money transmitter by the New York State Department of Financial Services.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder?
They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do, that's how you business differently.
This episode is brought to you by Intuit QuickBooks. Learn more at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds in envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.